And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show for this Friday. It's the 12th of December 2025. We're just at 5 minutes past nine and we're all set for a bumper 3 hours of conversation and features and your views. And we invite them over the next hour, as I'll soon introduce to you our Friday panel. We want your views as we go. 086 6025000, WhatsApps and texts to that number, or give us a call on 07491 25000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. Michael White, who is the chair of the Green Party in Donegal. Good morning to you, Michael. How are you?
Very well, Greg. Thank you.
Good to have you with us. India Kennedy, who campaigns, who's the campaigns and events director with Ogra Fianna Fáil. Good morning to you, India. How are you keeping?
I'm good, Greg. Good morning, and good morning to your listeners.
Good to see you too. And we have Deputy Padder Tobin, the leader of AIN2. Good morning, Padder.
Morning, Greg. How are you doing?
Thanks for joining us. You're up in Donegal this weekend.
I am.
No, you've been muted there. Sorry, someone might be making contact with you. Padder, if you could just unmute yourself there. That's it. Go ahead.
Apologies there. Yes, we're speaking in Buncrana at the Novena between 7 and 8, at Cockhill Chapel. I'm a guest speaker there. Looking forward to that. And then we're having a meet and greet between 8 and 9.30 in St. Mary's Hall, I understand, besides the church there in Cockhill and Buncrana. So we're basically speaking about our projects across the country, but also the work that we're doing in Donegal in terms of defective concrete, in terms of infrastructure, in terms of housing, etc. So we're looking forward to that event.
Yeah, okay. Right, now let's get on. A quick one to start with, if you don't mind. India Kennedy, I might come to you first. Australian under-16s are starting to come to terms with life without social media. Just curious to whip around the panel. Is this something we should be watching on with interest and perhaps even maybe implementing ourselves?
Absolutely, Greg. I do think that the implementation of the new rules in Australia was a great thing to do for young people. But I think it should have been more phased in rather than just dropped in. I think it's unfair for young people to have grown up with media and then to suddenly just overnight not be allowed it. I think for the safety of young people online, these allocations are so important, but I think that it needs, if it's brought into Ireland, we definitely need to look at a different model to ensure that it's phased in rather than dropped in, because it can be quite damaging for young people.
On such a big issue though, is it not best to just rip off the plaster?
Not particularly, no. It is a massive issue and there is so many issues with protection of minors online. But when you grow up with something like the media, I know that probably sounds silly because they are young people, but the media is so prevalent in people's lives now. Everybody's on social media. Everybody relies so heavily on the media and on online applications. And I think that if we're going to do it, we have to phase it in rather than just dropping it in.
Padder Tobin, as a legislator, you'd be looking on, I presume. What's your view on all of this?
Yeah, so I think the Australians have taken the right step, and not a minute too soon, to be honest. We know that social media and smartphone consumption for young children is really, really dangerous. You know, children are losing the ability to communicate with each other. Children are, you know, becoming more isolated because of the time they're spending online. Children are being bullied 24 hours a day. When they have a phone in their bedroom at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, they're being bullied in terms of content being sent to them and in terms of stuff being said on social media. And then, you know, we have this really serious children where problem where children are consuming hardcore violent pornography at a very, very young age, and that's leading to sexual violence and gender-based violence as well. So, you know, this is, you know, something that we've been calling for the last number of years. We actually brought about a bill to ban smartphones for children under the age of 12. And we brought about a bill to stop the provision of hardcore pornographic material to children as well. Many teachers that I'm speaking to at the moment are telling me that children are significantly suffering as a result of this. And we should give children back their childhood.
So
they should
be
able to enjoy.
Will you be progressing proposals for an outright social media ban for under 16s, or at a different age, or what?
Yeah, we're looking to first of all to proceed with a bill in relation to that. You know, I'm just thinking back on a number of cases in the past where it's been very obvious where social media has been central to the difficulties that children are experiencing. Last year, 105,000 children were referred to TUSLA, the highest figure in the history of the state. And, you know, if you put that into context, 65,000 children do the Leaving Cert every year. So way more children are now being referred to TUSLA on an annual basis than ever before. In terms of CAMHS, in terms of mental health, in terms of child psychology, all of those issues are, you know, showing that there's a big increase in anxiety and stress and mental health issues for children than there was just 20 and 30 years ago. And there's no doubt that social media is playing a significant role in that. So, yeah, we'll be looking forward to bring our bill forward again to the Dáil, and hopefully Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael will support it.
Michael, what's your views on this?
I'm not sure, Greg. I guess I don't know the details of how it's being implemented. So
it's literally just like the kids woke up and the apps have gone from their phones, zero access, and we can talk about workarounds and VPNs and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, they have, to use that phrase you used earlier, ripped the plaster off. They woke up and, you know, if the apps were on their phones, they've been deleted, and they are actually also putting pressure on the social media companies if they do use a VPN to sort of say, well, where's the phone registered? Where's this child registered? Are you sure they're in the United States or wherever they might be? So they're trying to cut off all access to social media for under 16s, and they're familiar with the workarounds. I respect what India's saying, and I might get it.
My question would be, do the kids still have access to, say, internet search? Can they still use email? Can they use other aspects? So my question is, it's an interesting experiment, which everybody will look at. There seems to be consensus that it's bad. Now, it's definitely no question it's bad if children can access or are being exposed to imagery and pornography. That's absolutely 100% bad. But that could still happen anyway, I guess, if they got access to web browsers. So I think there's a bigger problem there about how that content's produced in the first place, how it's released and how it's controlled. But I think it appears to be a good idea. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, parents still want their kids to be able to contact them via phone. Having Google Maps isn't a bad thing. So their technology is not bad per se, but it will be interesting to see how this rolls out.
Well, talking of the potential workaround, and I can find that information out, obviously we're having the conversation now about age verification. We've seen that introduced into the into Britain. That would obviously limit many of the options that you've just talked of. So, A, would you be in favour of a social media ban for under-16s or under-14s? And B, should that be, at the time, coupled with age verification? Because in one website, very popular adult website, I'll put it like that, just given the time of the morning, there was a 70% reduction in people accessing the content of that. So would you be more inclined to be in favour of this move if it included age verification?
I think so. All of us need to have clarity on the shared objectives. I mean, my objective would be to remove that kind of material and make it inaccessible, not have it produced in the first place. Most people would agree with that. But there are other things where there would be discussion. For example, I'm really anti-online gambling. I think it's terrible. I think it's really, really mass-produced. Every second ad you see on television. That's my personal opinion. I guess there's quite a few people in Ireland that would disagree with me. So there's an example of something where if I was in charge, I might ban it, but a lot of people wouldn't want that to happen. So some things are worth discussing.
I think there's if you don't mind me drawing a bit of a separation in what fully grown adults do, as regrettable as it is, what our principal responsibility, I think, as adults is to protect children. And I think when you start throwing in adult choices into it, it kind of kicks the can down the road. And who's to say children might be harmed in the meantime?
I agree with that. So absolutely, if the objective is to protect children, 100%. So I think the ban may be a great idea. What I'm asking is the ban in itself as effective as it can be? Or are there other things that need to be done? And there are other things that do need to be done in addition to a ban on social media.
They do seem to be trying to close the loopholes, Patter.
Yeah, just this issue has been real for about 10 or 15 years now. We have seen cases where young children have been murdered in this country after being seriously sexually assaulted, and where the perpetrators, young boys, when looked on their phones are full of thousands of images which are really graphic and very violent. And, you know, we have the Rape Crisis Center saying that there's been a significant increase in sexual assault on children under the age of 18 by children under the age of 18.
Peer-to-peer assault, it's shocking.
Yeah, and so, like, I'm frustrated that, you know, I have been saying this to Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael government for at least 8 years. And every time I do, they respond to me, but this is shocking, and they respond in...
Yeah, but Padraig, the biggest resistance from this is coming from adults, though. When we floated this idea of age verification, right, all of a sudden people are going, well, I don't want to pass on my information to some third party, blah, 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 blah. I don't know if that's the motivation or they don't want to have to sign in to look at some adult material, but it seems to be the biggest resistance is coming from adults, not kids.
There is a civil libertarian instinct among some adults, especially online, who are pushing back to this because they fear any... restrictions in terms of access to the internet. But look at it like this. The government knows that it needs to ban the advertisement of junk food at, you know, children's television, because it's very clear the link between junk food and, you know, obesity. And yet they still haven't joined the dots between, you know, a lot of the content that's pushed on social media.
Could it be the fact that, sorry to cut across you just to move it along though, could it be the fact that our entire economy is reliant on a lot of the companies that are making the profits off of this? Because we know technically on the likes of the Xbox, PlayStation, etc., you can filter this crap out for kids. They're choosing not to. Are we not taking a stance on this because we don't want to accept our paymasters?
Well, it's also, sorry for interrupting, but they're also, they've been strongly resisting any efforts. I mean, that's the reason X has removed all its content moderation. The other social media like Facebook have refused to take any responsibility for the material that's presented on their platform. So that has been a huge factor in the reason that more activity hasn't been taking place in the last 10 years. They fought tooth and nail to avoid. So the Australian thing's probably, there's probably the nuclear option in response to that.
Yeah, no, I get you. And I'll get another word on this before we go to the break from India. But just to finish that answer to that question as it relates to, are we too reliant on big tech to bare our teeth?
Yeah, so like in my view, most governments at the moment are fearful of big tech. So big tech is so powerful, it's so wealthy, it's such, you know, a high number of jobs. It's, you know, it's in this country, it's so high in the tax base that we use that countries are, our governments are fiercely deferential to those big tech companies and very fearful to impinge in any way on their business models. And these are business models. These are companies that designed content for young children in the stickiest fashion to, you know, work on the serotonin in their brain to make it as addictive as possible. And, you know, unfortunately, we're giving children phones and, you know, they're becoming addicted to this content. And, you know, we have a responsibility. Like, it's the same as alcohol. You know, alcohol is fine for an adult in moderation, etc. But you wouldn't sell a bottle of vodka to a 14-year-old.
India,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, India. I mean, are you still of the view that it would any changes would need to be faced? And also, do you think, as Michael White pointed out, you know, you need to close the loopholes, i.e., access to over 18s adult material, and that's done through age verification. Would you be up for that?
I think a lot of it is, I'm not going to blame the parents here, but I think, Greg, that a lot of it is to do with the parents. Like, the parents have a job to moderate it as much as they can. Like, there is parental controls that you can put on your phones, and you can put on iPads, and you can put on laptops. But then you buy an Xbox and you buy Grand Theft Auto, which is an 18-year-old verification for a 12-year-old. They're seeing this graphic content everywhere they look, and it's up to the parents to try and moderate that as much as possible. Yeah. But again, as you said, it's very difficult because the media and the internet is just a wild, wild west of things that you can access
children,
at your fingertips.
I think children can sort of, I'm not saying it's right, but yeah. I think children can differentiate between playing Grand Theft Auto and how you treat people in the real world. You know, they're not going to go down to Attican and Main Street running people over. But when you have a situation whereby, you know, adult material is portrayed as to how a functional sexual relationship is supposed to go on, and we know that's absolutely crazy, some of the crap that's on it. One of the biggest searches in Ireland, which makes me puke, is stepsister, right? Now, that's adults. That's freaky. But this company released this information. It's one of the top three. That we don't need kids looking at that crap. do we?
Absolutely not. No, definitely not. And it's taken away their childhoods. It's taken away the way that they view a healthy relationship and a healthy relationship with a partner. And I think more controls, definitely heavier controls, need to be put forward for that to protect our children.
All right. Listen, thank you for that. We'll be back after the break. It's St. Oran's School Hall where you're going, isn't it, Padder?
That's right. It's St. Oran's School Hall in Coquhillan, Buncrana on Sunday night. So looking forward to
it. I did thrust that on you right at the top of the show, so we'll clarify that again before we're finished.
For sure.
Michael White, given that Ireland is a visa waiver program country, how do you feel we can reconcile the US plans to demand 5 years of social media history from prospective tourists with their principles of free speech? And what is the Irish government's strategy for protecting our private data and ease of travel under this new digital scrutiny if it does come to pass?
Yeah, this is a cause for concern. I guess most people would be... one of the guys I was reading online was saying, you know, if you'd heard China was introducing a rule where they wanted to scan 5 years of your social media and they wanted your email addresses and they wanted details about your relatives' dates of birth and stuff, you'd be freaked out. The fact that this is being introduced by America is a big cause for concern. I think there's a 60-day review process, but I don't know if anybody outside of America gets to input into that process. So it kind of, this announcement this week is kind of on top of, I don't know, you know, that security strategy that was launched last Friday, which kind of says it's 10 times more negative about Europe than it is about Russia. And so it's a cause for concern. Barry Andrews, the MEP, he says it's outrageous. They suggested changes that not even authoritarian states around the world would introduce or have introduced these requirements for visa waiver travel. So that is a concern.
What do you think the motivation is? Do you think it is to sort of protect the United States, or is it in a way to try and deter people from speaking negatively about the United States or Israel or any of its partners for that matter?
Well, this is the concern. People will start to self-censor. I mean, people will start going through their social media and removing anything they've written over the last few years. That's the effect will be a negative effect in terms of people not feeling free to speak freely, in case it'll affect their possibility of going on holiday to the US. I mean, stepping back a wee bit, it's important to remember all of us have huge family. Well, most of us have huge family connections with the US. It's a lovely, I love the place. New York City is one of my favorite places, but the atmosphere has changed with this new administration this year. And we're only 12 months into this administration and the changes are pretty drastic. I mean, what was announced last week in that strategy is really anti-European. It's kind of shocking. You know, the moves regarding Ukraine, potentially the Europe being left on its tod to face Russia. There's a lot of stuff happening this year. So The visa thing is on top of the other things that are happening. One wonders, is this is just announced this week, is this all is planned for these for things that affect travel, or will there be more and more? You know, potentially it's going to get harder. For those of us lucky enough to be born in Europe in the last 30, 40 years, travel between countries has been really easy, and it got easier and easier that we got into the visa waiver program in the 1990s. Now it's going to get more and more difficult, and people won't be able to travel from country to country as easily as they could, which is, in my view, a bad thing.
Yeah, and separate to it, but tied in, this Make Europe Great Again, where Donald Trump is looking to pull four European countries out of the EU, Italy amongst them. I think Poland's in there as well. It's bizarre stuff. India.
It's not bizarre. I mean, sorry for interrupting, but the chief dissent spokesperson in the European Union was saying that while Trump has been describing European leaders as weak, et cetera, et cetera, the guy, I think he's called Kavidis, his point is that the reason they're at this is because they actually view Europe and a successful united European Union as a threat. So that what they are trying their best, I mean, they're explicitly trying to break up the European Union. They've explicitly said they're going to support guys like Farage, like Bardella in France, like AFD in Germany. They've said they're going to support these extreme parties in order to drive disintegration and break up the European Union. So it's a, you know, it's a mad thing.
Yeah, India, as far as I'm aware, I don't really have anything to hide on my social media. But I suppose if you were very into, say, for instance, the situation in the Middle East, you know, you'd have to make a big moral decision, wouldn't you? Keep that stuff on my social media because it's something I truly believe in? Or do I purge it because I want to go in and do a bit of winter shopping in New York? You know, it's a funny old situation we find ourselves in 25.
Absolutely. I mean, like, freedom of expression and privacy aren't luxuries. They're cornerstones of Irish and EU values. And I think the fact that they are now at jeopardy is a serious, serious concern that we as Irish citizens and we as European citizens need to look into more to protect our own freedom of expression. I think, like, diplomacy especially should be used to push back on intrusive demands like this, because we all have the right to express our feelings. We all have the right to express our feelings, especially on Trump. And I do think that this is a direct order from him to make himself look better. I think it's so unfair. People have the right to have views on Palestine, have views on Trump's administration, and they shouldn't be blocked from going to America to see family, to see this, to see the country itself, just because their views differ from his views.
I think there's a connection here in Ireland's position that's been taken on behalf of us in relation to Israel and Russia and the whole European mission, whatever that might turn out to be, that has potentially driven a wedge between our relationship and the United States forever. You talked about diplomacy. I don't think we have any diplomatic weight in the United States anymore. And I think we've pretty much stamped that out with the likes of certain high-ranked politicians being verbally critical of Donald Trump, etc. You know, we seem to be losing that unique position that arguably we had, not just with the United States, but with many countries around the world. How do you feel as a younger person, you know, you being carried along on this journey by the government?
Absolutely, Greg. No, I understand what you're saying there. I do think, though, it's important because we have so many Irish in America and we have so many Irish across the EU that we have to take a stronger stance on it and we have to take a stronger position on it to protect our own people. I agree in a certain sense that we're probably not as strong as we once were, but we also are a big exporter. We're a big player in roles with EU and American delegations and American trade. And I think we need to take a strong stance on this, have our feelings be made. And I think that's so important. Like, as a young person, I have my own views. I'm entitled to express my views. That's the joy of freedom of expression. And I shouldn't be blocked from going to travel America just because.
But what do you do then in real terms? So say, for instance, you do have a view say you want to go to America in March. I don't know what's in your social media. Are you going to check it out? Would you delete it? Are you now subconsciously going to be careful if you plan on going to America in the next while? Are you subconsciously going to be wondering what you post? And is that really the aim of all of this?
Unfortunately, Greg, I'd say you would have to now be a bit more aware of what you post. I've always been aware of what I post on social media, what I like, what I share, what I engage with, because in the digital age, everything's watched, everything's noticed, everything's seen. But I think that it's unfortunate that we have to restrict our views on certain issues that we're passionate about, like Palestine, like the government in America, just because it might block us from traveling.
So you're going to have to be careful with what you're posting.
We are going to have to. I think it is working. It's the biggest breach. It's the biggest breach of freedom of expression, freedom of travel, right to move. And I think more needs to be done to try and block this,
because the attack on Europe is coming through certain channels, and it's coming through X, for an example. You know, X, the biggest platform, news platform in the world, is at proper odds with the EU, and will be critical in trying to break up Europe if that's what Trump wants. Pádraig Tobin?
Yeah, some people might be a little bit frustrated listening to the debate there for the last couple of minutes, because the European Union has not been a bastion of free speech over the last while. So right across Europe, pro-Palestinian marchers are being broken up, they're being raided, and they're being jailed because of their views towards Palestine. That's the first thing. Secondly, in Britain, for example, there's numerous examples of individuals standing distances from abortion clinics, privately, silently praying and being arrested. And actually, in Europe, people are being put into jail for what they have put onto Twitter in the recent number of years. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael introduced the hate speech bill, which again was a censorship bill just recently, and had to reverse from it because of the backlash in society. So both America and Europe, unfortunately, have gone down a route in recent times of actually restricting speech.
And it's packaged up in different ways, which is kind of interesting.
It is. So So we would feel that, you know, a good democracy is the competition of ideas. People should be respectful, but people should be allowed to engage robustly with each other. And in many, many Western countries, that, you know, engagement is being reduced. And you know, I'm not happy. Like, it's funny because I applied for an ESTA just in the last couple of weeks myself. And the question is already there in terms of social media. I'm going to Washington in mid-January, and we have aim to have a public meeting for Irish America in New York on the 24th of January. When I applied for the ESTA, I had to answer those questions. But just interestingly enough,
did you have to give your social media handles?
Well, as it happened, we gave some of the information in relation to the social media. Now, this particular announcement, I understand, is a step up in strictness as to the situation today. But even just for your listeners, when I was in Sinn Féin and as a TD going to the United States, your travel to the United States was significantly restricted at the time. And indeed, when I went to airports, you would be held for a couple of hours and interviewed robustly. I would often have to ring home to the Irish embassy to even just get onto a plane. So this strictness in American travel has been there before. But it's really important that we don't kind of in Europe look down on America and say, God, aren't we so wonderful? Because Europe has lots of questions to answer itself in terms of freedom of speech.
All right, we're in the company of Michael White, Chair of the Green Party in Donegal, India Kennedy, Campaigns and Events Director with Ogra Fianna Fáilland, Deputy Paddy Tobin, Leader of AIN2. Before we move on, any of you, anything to come back on that last conversation? It's just I didn't get back to everyone, or we can move forward. Michael?
I think I understand what Paddy's sort of saying, is that maybe what would be referred to as wokeism was restricting the views, and that's on his side of the political debate.
But also in terms of Palestine as well, Michael. So right through Europe, pro-Palestinian protesters are also being inhibited in terms of speech and in terms of peaceful protest. In Britain, they're being arrested. So it's not just on that kind of woke instinct to inhibit freedom of speech. But so what I'm saying is the left and the right, unfortunately, often have a tendency to restrict other people's speech. And actually where we should be coming from is freedom of speech should be available to both left and right.
I think I'm not disagreeing with that. I think the UK is a particular case. Most Irish people would be shocked by the level of constraints that are being put in place for the rights to protest.
Well, I mean, even, you know, they if they don't like an organisation, they prescribe it, if that's the terminology. And next thing you know, you're sitting at a council meeting in Derry and the PSNI turn up because it was on a web stream. You know, that's not freedom of expression.
Okay,
I'll stay with you, Michael. Recent figures highlighted the persistent problem of wind energy wastage, really. 1.3 million euro of green energy is lost every single day because the grid simply cannot accept it. At the same time, Ireland's consistently at the top of the list in terms of high electricity prices. The gap between wholesale and retail, and even the ESRI, which I thought quite bizarre, said they don't really know why electricity prices are so high. I'd direct them maybe to the electricity company's profits, and they might start to sort of get a sense of what that may be. But how do we get to the bottom of this for the consumer? Because, you know, power prices is one of the biggest impacts on people's lives at the moment, Michael. And also, too, you know, a lot of people have been opposed to wind farms, and yet here we see we're wasting the wind or the energy being created by them, or that could potentially be created by them.
No, this one, for the layperson, it seems like there's a big drive driven by the Green Party to switch to renewable energy, and wind energy is fantastic and effectively free. And rightly, everybody's saying, if we're getting all this wind energy, why are prices not dropping? In fact, they're increasing. And it turns out the answer to that's kind of complicated. So I've had this discussion with people. I mean, fundamentally, it should be, we get more wind energy, our prices should drop. Everybody agrees that makes sense. But the pricing mechanism we have, first of all, Ireland is locked into a European pricing mechanism. It was set back in the days when we were all using fossil fuel energy. So cut a long story short, our prices are set by the gas price.
Yeah, but did your government not agree to pay those that produce green energy the same price you would pay for coal-fired energy. I mean, that was your party in government that agreed to that. That's what we're stuck with here at the moment. That's why it's not free.
They did initially in order to make it commercially viable for those companies to come in and pitch for it. But the intention was that the prices would drop over time. But for the price to drop over time, it's going to require that pricing mechanism is set European-wide, and it's going to require a European-wide change. Now, I'm not sure the detail. The changes have been discussed, but they haven't gotten into action yet. The people on the street are right. If we have more renewable energy, which we should have loads of in Ireland, the prices should drop. That's not going to happen with the current pricing structure, and that pricing structure needs to change.
So, but if you say we're tied into some sort of a European model, why are our electricity prices the highest in Europe, and reductions that we've seen in other European countries haven't came to pass here?
The answer to that, like the ESRA, I don't know. The providers are allowed not to provide sufficient information for us to be able to tell what's going on, and that's a failure of Irish government. The Irish government should insist that we get transparency into it. Like, you'd have to assume we're being ripped off, and we need to see what the details are of that to understand what's going on.
They're
looking at this and they don't know.
That's crazy. I find that really, really quite concerning. Padder, you first, then India.
Yeah, so there's no doubt there's price gouging in this country. In terms of the differential between the wholesale price and the retail price, that differential is higher here.
Well, how can you see that, but the ESRI sit in a public accounts committee and say they don't see that?
Well, it has been reported by the European Energy Association. Electric Ireland received €750 million of profit last year, which is incredible. It's a state company. It's working on government policy, and it's also profiteering in terms of this. In terms of infrastructure, and this is the big problem, Greg. This is I cannot highlight this enough. For about 15 years, Ireland was the second from the bottom in European terms in investment in infrastructure. Only Romania invested less in infrastructure than we did. And as a result, our grid is really poor, Nick. The grid is the structure that allows for the electricity to be received. Now, incredibly, there are zero offshore wind turbines in Ireland. We've been talking as a country about offshore wind for at least 30 years. The government have held more offshore wind conferences than actually there are turbines off the coast of Ireland. And there is one current biodigester connected to the grid at the moment.
But why would we have any faith in wind energy, offshore wind energy, wave energy, when the on-land stuff has had such an impact on our communities? We're pouring concrete into peat bogs, and the companies are being told to switch off, or we're having to pay them $1.3 million a day for electricity we can't use. So why would we have any faith in the benefits of offshore wind or wave energy if we can't get this right?
You're right.
Just a couple of points there. Sorry.
Go on, Michael.
There's two things here we're talking about. One is the cost of energy. The second thing is whether the grid can handle the energy. The grid's a separate thing. The grid is being built out. It doesn't happen overnight, but the grid, there's a plan up to 2030. So the grid is actually being improved.
But there are systems whereby, for instance, I presume this electricity could be distributed in the communities it's generated. For an example, that might be more palatable. Quick word, Padder, before I bring in India, please.
Yeah. So Michael mentioned that the grid's been built. It's snail's pace. So when I was a young councillor back in 2006, the project for the North-South interconnector was launched. The North-South interconnector is not built. I will be getting my pension before the North-South interconnector is built. And that is the key problem with so much of Ireland's infrastructure. We have the slowest planning, the slowest licensing, the slowest permitting, the slowest tendering, and the slowest judicial reviews in the whole of the European Union.
Well, the government's introduced a plan to address that. But
Listen, that plan is in itself talking about 2027, 2028, 2029 for it to be implemented. Do you know what I mean? So even the plan to speed up the process in itself is a multi-year plan.
It is, of course. But I do know AirGrid are it's open to public consultation at the moment, the North-South interconnector. Overland to the wires going above ground, which I don't...
Which is problematic, too.
But it's still, they're going to be these massive cables and posts going all over the place. India Kennedy, sorry, and thank you for being so patient.
No problem. I I can agree with what Potter's saying there about like curtailment isn't just a failure of wind, it's a failure of infrastructure. I attended the ALDI conference there a couple of months ago in Brussels, and one thing that they said was the infrastructure and the ropes and the rigmaroles behind infrastructure in Ireland is so far behind. If you want to build a hospital in Japan, you make a decision on the Monday and you start building it on the Tuesday, whereas there's so much paperwork. But one thing we have to be aware of with offshore wind farm, we have to be aware of the damages and the effects that it can have on the fishing community. And they're already in a vulnerable place at the minute.
The KFO are all for it. They're in with, as far as I'm aware, still in with a company that are looking to...
IFPO... The Irish Fish Processors Organization they're not against it. I'm not saying the fishermen are against it, but they're just, they want to make people aware that it can affect the fishing grounds. It can be affected.
But with
the
respect,
flow of fish.
To use your analogy there, what country did you mention? Japan. If this were Japan, we'd decide on a Monday and build it out at sea on a Tuesday. You can't have it both ways.
No, I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying we have to be aware of where we build. Like you said, pouring concrete into bogs. Like we have. A wind is our most valuable resource. We can use it. We need to be able to use it. Mm. But we need to think logically of where we put it. We don't want to just throw up a bunch of wind farms here, there and everywhere. We have to be logistic about the planning.
Is wind the future or is solar the future? I mean, is solar not the more reliable? It doesn't rely necessarily on when the wind is blowing, etc. Yeah. I mean, yeah, Paddy, did you want to come back in there?
Yeah, no, you need a mix there because like in reality, the more diversity of inputs you have, the more stable the system is. If you're completely dependent on wind, obviously sometimes, especially in winter, we get big high pressures. We haven't seen one for a while, but sometimes we get big frosty high pressures, which, you know, where there's no wind at all. And so you want a diverse range of inputs. You know, biodigestion is going to have to have a role.
No one's mentioning nuclear.
What's that?
No one's mentioning nuclear.
It's too expensive.
So, yeah, and
too unsafe.
To be honest,
yeah. Could I just on the general point that Parker was making too about infrastructure, Eamon Ryan wrote a good article a couple of weeks ago in the Irish Times just highlighting, you know, everybody's looking at planning and planning rules, legal, judicial reviews, but he also made the point there's a big fundamental problem with the Department of Public Expenditure. So he cites the fact that they did their damn best to block the metro projects in Dublin. They did everything they could to prevent the national broadband plan going forward. You know, they've also they kind of curtailed the amount of people being hired for planning in Ireland too. So he was just saying that's a systemic thing that needs to be fixed.
But also surely the elephant in the room is as well to the housing plan. 300 houses over the next 5 years. Everyone talks about water and sewerage, but the electricity infrastructure. We've got the ESB teams running around this county, sticking in infrastructure left, right, and centre to try and patch the network together and get people connected. You know, this north-south interconnector is essential. And how do we match these targets when we've got hose pipe bans still in place in parts of Donegal? And
there's 3.5 billion. It's not just planned and it's not just reviewed. There's 3.5 billion being allocated and is being spent to build the grid infrastructure.
Of course it is. But Michael, we know what the infrastructure that's needed. It's the north-south interconnector, and it's only going out to public consultation at the moment. It has so many hoops to jump through. That's the elephant in the room in terms of housing delivery. It might be costed and it might be planned, but it's years and years and years away.
So just, I'm on the infrastructure committee in Leinster House, and we had Ishka Aaron in with us recently. I asked Ishka Aaron, how long would it take for Ishka Aaron to fill the gaps that are currently blocking the building of homes across the country? They said that they will have that finished by 2050. Now, you know, that's an astounding figure. 25 years.
You talked about being retired earlier. Blimmin', India will be on our pension by the time that's done.
There is. So, and there's two things here. It's really important. Like, there has to be accountability here because we can talk in circles about what the problems are. But the planning, tendering, licensing, permitting, and judicial review slowness in this country is a responsibility of Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, and in part the Greens. These are the ministers who have had their hands on the levers.
Yeah, hang on, I take a difference there.
For the last 10 or 15 years. And there is actually no problem with money in terms of infrastructure bills. It's Ireland has the most bureaucratic system in the whole
of the
European
Union. Yeah, but
is that
not the checks and balances? Because it's all right saying we want this, that, and then, but India, next thing you know, you put a big electricity transmitter in your front garden, Potter, and you might be saying, geez, where are these planning protections?
So there's two things. So there's two things. The first thing is we need to go to the communities first to make sure that we come up with a solution that actually has the consent of the communities. The problem is we build these projects and then over about 4 or 5 years, then go to the communities and try to force it, which creates a battle that lasts for 10 or 15 years. That's the first thing. But the second thing is we do as a country need to start to cost the element of the lack of infrastructure. So the tens of thousands of young couples that haven't got a house, we never really cost that into the system. We cost the project and its effect on the immediate environment now into the system, but not the tens of thousands of people who are waiting for the infrastructure so that they can live and raise their families.
Okay, well, India, you know, are we capable of doing this ourselves? In November, we took in $10 billion in corporation tax. Apparently, that's okay to spend on long-term projects like infrastructural development, okay? So that would build our 10T project here five times over, build two or three children's hospitals, even with cost overruns. The cash is there. Are we actually capable of a country to actually deliver major infrastructural development that actually is required? Because I'm starting to wonder, we've got the cash, but
absolutely.
Where is it?
Greg,
where is this stuff?
I think we have the cash, we have the resources, we have the natural resources and the raw resources. We just need to make sure that it's, as I said earlier, it needs to be collectively thought through so that, like you said, there's no transmitter going up in your front garden. I think that hopefully in the next couple of years, people will realize the importance of renewable energy, of solar panels, of wind energy, and really hone in on that. The funding's there, the infrastructure's there. We just need to push forward now and make sure that it's brought through in a safe and sustainable way.
I don't know. I worry about delivery, but I do take your point.
We've been able to build loads of roads.
Well, we aren't. We're waiting for 60 years for a bypass of Ballybuffet and Stranoller.
In Donegal, and that's a political issue. Well, we can build it. If somebody down in Dublin or Cork wants to get it, they get it. There's no fundamental reason we can't build this stuff.
The metro's been talked about for generations as well. You would love that.
That was the Department of Public Expenditure sticking their oar in left, right, and centre.
Someone eventually has to take responsibility.
There has to be political accountability here. It can't be just the department sticking in their oar. Listen, like, in my home county, we've been promised a rail line since 1994. It's likely to be delivered around 2036. That's from conception to completion, it will be 42 years. Now, in the 1860s, the same rail line was built with picks and shovels in 3 years. Political accountability is missing here.
All right, we'll have to move on. Do you want to remind people where you are on Sunday, Padder, just whilst we have you?
Yes, indeed. So St. Oran's School Hall from 8 o'clock to 9:30. And previous to that, in the local chapel there in Cockhill in Buncrana from 7 to 8 o'clock.
All right. Have a good day. Michael White, pleasure as always. Have a great weekend. Look after yourself.
Thanks, Greg. Thank you.
Bye-bye. India Kennedy, thanks so much for joining us. Look after yourself.
Thanks for having me,
bye-bye.
Greg.
Bye-bye. See you soon. All right. Thanks to our panel. Thanks to you texting in great numbers. Right. On the energy conversation, nuclear isn't unsafe. Stop spreading misinformation. France's power is so cheap because they've nuclear. They haven't blown up. People need to get over the Soviets failing in Chernobyl. It's almost as if they were infamous for failure and shoddy work. The French did give out free energy there for a time, if I remember correctly. A caller says, nuclear is neither too expensive or unsafe. Put the interconnector underground and no one would object, but the ESB won't spend the money, says another listener there. Another, the Irish government is not going to put affordable electricity or fuel in place. They hike taxes on it every chance they get. Profiteering, massive tax take, rip off Ireland in full flow. And another, why would we go with either wind or solar and not both? What just seems really stupid to do. Some more sources of energy equals more power, and that seems to make a lot of sense. Right, we'll be back with more on the 9 till noon show after we take a break for the news and obituary notices, where I'll catch up on more of your comments, and we've got more great guests for you to meet.